Hello and welcome to Still Buffering, a cross-generational guide to the culture that made us. I am Riley Smurl.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
And I'm Taylor Smurl.
So I don't want to rush us, but I will say that Justin is upstairs making 40 gallons of chili, and at some point I do have to help him or else he may leave
me. That's a lot of chili.
Nobody's going to ask me why I'm making. We're just going to leave that for our poor listeners are wondering.
I assumed that was going to follow. Yeah. I didn't know that was just going to be a standalone statement there.
This is the problem with having a show where we really don't, we don't set up bits. Like, we decide the, obviously what we're going to talk about each week is like our subject matter, but nothing else is decided. It's just all freestyling. And sometimes I try to set it up like, come on, come on, siblings, ask me the question. Let's
mentally, I had Taylor Swift news to share. So when you jumped in with chili, I was like, I got to redirect my brain here. I just woke up.
Okay.
That's the thing, Sip. You never ease into the episode. We do our intros, and then you just pitch something wild every week.
Hey, listen, if you all want to take over, you just say it. Like, I got
no,
it this
no,
week.
It's just, no. Just, you know, why? I was still picked. There was a mental image of what 40 gallons of chili looked like in my head that I was trying to get the wrap around. Yeah. So.
It's for Chili Fest. It's okay. A festival here of chili. It's a chili based festival. We have a booth where we will be handing out chili to people, and then they pick a winner, and it's to raise money for Ronald McDonald House. And anyway, this is we are participating in this chili event, and so he's making 40 gallons of chili. I think if you want to explain to me what the heck is happening with Taylor Swift, Riley, because of you I think TikTok surfaces to me videos about Taylor Swift because I like your videos.
That's why.
It seems to me people want to explain to me a lot of like signals or videos or messages that Taylor Swift might be sending.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of disagreement about that.
A lot of people go real heavy handed on what they think an Easter egg is. And it gets a lot for me even because I can't understand it. That's not my news, though. My news is much simpler to understand. And that's, I think Taylor Swift has lost touch with her audience because she has an album coming out a week from today and has done nothing but tell us the track titles. And usually she releases a single, as you would expect. She has not done that now. So everyone's like, well, she's not going to, I guess, because now it's the last Friday before the album comes out next Friday. So why would she release one in a week? Then she announced that she has an exclusive reveal of something coming Thursday. But the only way you can watch it is if you watch Thursday Night Football on NFL or ESPN or whatever.
Wait, it'll happen like during football, so you have to be watching it to know it's gonna happen.
Like the announcement happened via a sports commentator at a game last night that said you need to watch the Arizona game next Thursday because Taylor Swift will be making an exclusive reveal. That's it. And then like she shared it.
Who made that deal?
I don't know because there was a rumor that maybe because she had a deal with Coca-Cola and Pepsi was sponsoring the NFL for a long time. That's why she never did the halftime show. So people thought now that NFL is being sponsored by someone else for the Super Bowl, she might do the halftime show. Now we know that's not true because Rihanna is doing it, I believe. So it makes no sense. Like, why of all the people that think their fans might be watching football on a Thursday night, she's got to know it's not hers.
Yeah, that's I don't know what to say about that. I would not imagine there's a big, I mean, obviously, I'm certain there are people exist who listen to Taylor Swift and watch football. There are people of all kinds who exist.
That overlap of the Venn diagram, though, can't be big.
Yeah, I wouldn't think like, demographics wise, yeah, it would be your target audience.
Maybe she's gotten really into football and she's just trying to get y'all on board.
Yeah, I mean, is Taylor Swift canonically a big football fan?
Not that I'm aware of. I don't believe that's in the canon. But all I can guess is it has been rumored for many weeks now that she's announcing her next big stadium tour. Mm-hmm. And people think that maybe she's using a stadium where she might do a show to announce a stadium tour. That's all people can guess. All I know is I will be home on Thursday and Dad watches Thursday night football. So I guess I've lucked out in that I don't have to find a way to bootleg some ESPN. I can, tell Dad I want to watch football.
Is it a team sheet or a state or like something she has a connection to? I mean, that's the other thing I'm trying to figure out. Like, why that location? Is that?
I have no idea. I don't even know who Arizona is playing. She's from Pennsylvania. And, did her music stuff in Tennessee. So
I don't know.
I am baffled.
That is not what I was getting surfaced on TikTok. That's other drama.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of other stuff happening that I didn't even want to get into, like watching TikToks myself, because it's just a lot. I just wanted to know if we were going to get a single, and everyone was theorizing that we might, and now that we haven't, that's all I cared about. So now I'm just waiting for the album to come out.
I didn't watch the TikToks because the first one I watched, I was waiting for them to explain the drama to me. And instead, they all seem to be prefaced on the idea that me, the viewer, knows the drama, and I'm just hearing their like commentary on the drama. I stopped engaging with it in hopes that TikTok would get the message and stop servicing it to me. I'm not liking any of these. Don't tell me. I don't understand it. It doesn't make sense to me. Please return to TikToks that I enjoy. I'm not even going to share what TikToks I enjoy, because then you two are going to make fun of me about it, and I'm just not.
What TikToks do you enjoy, Sid?
No, I'm not going to talk about TikToks I enjoy.
What TikToks do you enjoy?
I don't want to reveal this, too personal. TikTok knows too much about me, and it's uncomfortable to talk about.
I want to know what TikToks you like.
I don't feel like it. I don't think they're cool TikToks to have pitched to you. I think it's all just sort of a weird, like, I like, there's one, there's a couple people that have little jumping spiders and they make silly voices with the jumping spiders. That's my favorite thing. So that's where I'm at.
I mean, it's well established. Mine is full of Taylor Swift conspiracies, which I wouldn't argue is like cool.
I like pimple popping TikToks. Okay.
Oh, that is the worst thing you could say. I'm sorry. I was good. I was so ready to be supportive. I'm so sorry.
Sid!
I'm sorry. Oh. I'm a physician.
Oh. Well,
that doesn't mean you have to watch in your free time.
I was wondering what the audience was. I guess that's you.
Okay, maybe that's why I've gotten them surfaced to me, because it's what you like, and I like your videos whenever you post them.
It's not like 100%. Like, that's not all of my TikTok. I get lots of Zodiac content, and I enjoy that. Because Charlene Cooper used my TikTok sometimes, like, just to look at, I get a lot of makeup videos because of that. Mm. Especially, like, either scary makeup or, like not just, like, makeup. You know what I mean? Like, people who are trying to do, like, I'm a character or I'm trying to, like, Zodiac makeup. Because of that overlap, I get a lot of those, like, this is my Aries makeup, that kind of look. And, you know,
yeah.
Sometimes it involves prosthetics and headpieces and things. It's not always just like what I think of as day to day makeup. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well.
And then there's this one TikToker who does this whole series that she's running a lesbian B&B and she's like checking you in. I get all of her videos and I love those.
I've not seen that.
Yeah.
That's an interesting For You page you have curated there, Sid.
Zodiac and pimple popping and lesbians.
There you go.
Well,
that's it.
There we go. Now I've revealed my true self.
We don't.
I'm done with the charade of pretending I'm someone else. I will reveal my true intentions.
Ah. Speaking of revealing your true intentions.
Hey, there you go.
Let's talk about Do Revenge.
Hey,
because
picked up on that. Look at that. See, we didn't plan that, and you found the thread.
There we go. Working on those segues, getting better at them. Only it took 6.5 years. I want to talk about Do Revenge because I know it's not. I know it's spooky season, but this movie came out right after I'd done my last episode, and it just felt like too relevant right now. And too much like something we needed to talk about for us to not talk about it as soon as possible.
It's funny because since it is spooky season and it has the word revenge in the title, I did assume going in like people are going to get murdered.
Now, so I said up front on the last week's episode, it's not technically spooky, but it is about teenage girls, and those are scary to me.
Yes.
That's what's scary
about
it.
I don't know. I thought that it was going to escalate to murder. I thought it was like Heather's.
Mm.
But it was more of the Mean Girls than Heather's sort of direction.
It does have some Heather's vibes, though.
Yeah. I mean, it's got the intensity of Heather's minus the murder.
That's fair. I guess as a brief plot overview before we get into discussing it, Due Revenge is about Maya Hawke and Camila Mendez, a.k.a. Veronica from Riverdale, and Robin from Stranger Things.
Oh, that's Veronica from yes. Riverdale. Yes. Okay. I knew I had seen her in something before. I watched like one episode of Riverdale once.
That's Veronica from Riverdale. I'm glad she's getting some work that's not Riverdale.
Although she's still the same character.
She's still the same character. Fine. Yeah.
It does. Having not watched Riverdale, but having read almost every Archie comic that's ever been created, I get Veronica vibes.
Although I just want to say, and we won't talk about Riverdale too long, I'm on a TikTok now that it's a guy who summarizes what happens on Riverdale every week, because I haven't seen it since the first season. There's like, they all have superpowers now, and some of them died and came back to life, and then it like mm-hmm. went back to like Salem witch trial eras or something like that, and Cheryl Blossom is like a spirit that was never really Cheryl Blossom. I don't know. It's gone completely off the rails. I don't know what's happening over there anymore.
Yeah. I've read some summaries that I'm like, what now?
Yeah. It's hard for me to believe, but then I watch actual clips from it. It's like, oh no, that's accurate. That is what's happening.
Did Archie go to war?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
anyway, well, this is not about Riverdale. I just needed to know if Archie went to war.
Archie went to war.
I think that anyway. I think that happened once in a life with Archie. Or one of the Archie married. Anyway,
I think you're right.
I think that has happened in the books too, but
I don't think they were staying canon though with that one.
Archie went to war. Anyway.
Anyways, Due Revenge is about Drea and Nora. There you go. Drea and Nora. They are two girls who both get screwed over basically by two different people. And then they meet and want to do each other's revenge to try to get back at the people that embarrass them or hurt them, and no one is supposed to know their friends, so that they can, you know, carry out these secret revenge plots without people knowing they're working together, and hijinks ensue.
I think they do a really good job of concealing. I mean, like, obviously we're spoiling the
yeah we
the
are movie. Gonna spoil it, so
they do so secretly. Eleanor, aka Nora, Her revenge is actually against
Drea,
because a long time ago, Drea, I mean, it was pretty terrible, outed her and made her out to be a sexual predator.
And has
no memory of it. And so secretly she's been seeking revenge on her the whole time, which I feel like they concealed pretty well. I did have a sense I was missing something about her. Like, there was definitely an edge, like something's off. But I thought they did a pretty good job of making that a surprise.
Yeah, I agree. I had no idea. The only thing that I questioned was right when you first meet Eleanor, she's like doing the narration and saying she's, you know, about to become best friends with Drea, and Drea doesn't know it yet. So there's kind of an like question of why are you going to become friends with this girl? But then so much happens, it was easy for me to forget she ever said that. So when mm-hmm. it's revealed that she's been the one doing all the things that Drea thought her ex-boyfriend had done and had been the one, you know, trying to make her life harder, I mm-hmm. was surprised.
I was really happy that you worry, at least for me, the whole movie, that the ex-boyfriend's not going to get his comeuppance.
Yeah. I do think it's because I think what we have to talk about is that so much of this movie is like homage to other 90s teen movies. Like, there's a moment where Dre is standing in the hallway and all the girls are losing their minds over the texts that have been sent out between what is his name?
Max.
Max?
Yeah.
I was getting him confused. He's also in Euphoria, and his name's Ethan. I wanted to call him Ethan. All the texts that Max sends, and she's just standing there in the hallway watching, like, all this chaos happen. Like, that is the exact scene from Mean Girls when the burn book gets released and everyone's freaking out in the hallway and, like, things start catching on fire. It's basically like you took all a whole bunch of ideas from Heather's, Clueless, Mean Girls, 10 Things I Hate About You, I mean, all of it, and then just, like, put it in 2022. So that is a big moment when the very modern version of the awful, you know, ex-boyfriend gets his.
I love how they costume him, like, and it, like, he has painted nails and he's got very, like, kind of edgy and sometimes, like, I don't know, it's like a little, like, gender play clothing, like, it's like, but he's still a, like, an awful dude. It's just fashion, which is what it is now, but I appreciated that.
I felt like they were vaguely referencing Harry Styles sometimes with his look. Like, not to that extreme, but, like, just this, like, sort of vague nod to, like, this is cool now. This is what cool is now. It's interesting to see it in that sort of, like, the evolution of that kind of movie. Like, in Heather's, it's very much, like, they're the popular girls who are just very one-dimensional. They're evil. They must be killed. They must be stopped. And so the girl who, like, is sort of the not in with them, but not in with them, gets to, like, kill them. It's a very straightforward kind of revenge type of thing. To Mean Girls, where you have this sort of, like, the unpopular girl becomes the mean girl. Like, we can all be mean girl. Maybe we all have the ability to be nice and mean. Like, this sort of, like, evolution of that concept to this, where, like, everybody is kind of horrible, but also people have been horrible to them. And then they're all okay with it by the end. Like, everybody kind of turns out okay.
Yeah.
Even Max is, like, in a support group for toxic masculinity.
I don't know. I don't know how much I love the ending. I will say I was really into it up until, like, the very, very end. Because I didn't think that Drea should have gotten that guy back, the British guy with the blue hair. After she, like, got his, you know, best friend arrested, question mark. But are we supposed to think that because she lives in this area of California that's, like, super wealthy, she didn't actually go to prison? She went to some fancy, like, spa rehab place where Sophie Turner also was.
I liked the ending because I ultimately liked both characters and I didn't want bad things to happen to them. But it was a little, like, between what each of them did, like, Drea got, she got that girl expelled. And she also outed Eleanor. And then forgot about it, which I think is pretty heinous, too. And it's kind of, like, just, like, not, like, oh, yeah, I just forgot. Whereas compared to Eleanor, who I mean, because she didn't, the video was shared by her ex-boyfriend. Like, that was who started that. So.
Was it? Because there's a very brief clip they show when they're going back through Nora, like, telling her whole story of how she went to camp, where she's sitting there waiting at tennis camp to, like, go up. And she has an email on her phone typed out that's like, you won't believe this, tennis coach, blah, blah, blah. And then sends it out of her email.
She sent it to Erica.
Okay.
Who then got kicked out, who then got arrested for coke.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. So.
Yeah, that was her ex-boyfriend.
So Drea put her in rehab and Carissa and outed Nora.
Although, can I just say that Sophie Turner being in this movie for a total of, like, 90 seconds, just for her to yell in Drea's face, I don't do cocaine, was one of the best moments in recent media history.
Who is she?
She's from Game of Thrones.
Also Joe Jonas's wife.
Oh, okay.
So she's I didn't know who she was. Big actress. And when I saw her in the movie, I was like, oh, she's going to play a big part. No.
I was really surprised, that she played. I mean, she's great in it, but it is a bit part. But also, I forget because I know her from Game of Thrones, where there are so many big actors, like tall, mm-hmm. I mean physically big, and she's so tall that she's just so towered tall. Over this movie, and I did not realize she was that tall, because yeah. I've only seen her in Game of Thrones, where she's short compared to everybody.
I only knew that because I'd seen her next to Joe Jonas, who, you know, she towers over him also. Yeah.
She's, you know, that makes sense. She's not in the movie very much, but they do linger on her longer than I feel like the plot needed. And now that I know she's a famous person, I understand. I thought, because there were moments, that was the only, like, as a movie, I really enjoyed it overall. It's in that same vibe. If you like movies like we've referenced, Heathers and Mean Girls and that kind of thing, I think you'd like this movie. It's a very much in that same sort of mold, and mm-hmm. I enjoy that. I did think it was a little long, like, and draggy at moments. Like,
that's fair.
They just took a lot of time to get to where they were going.
Yeah.
Riley, have you ever seen Jawbreaker?
No.
Okay, if you like this, you should watch that. Said of you, that's mm-mm. from the 90s, and it's a bit of a same kind of dark, higher stakes teen girl movie.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
where an uncool girl is made a cool girl for devious reasons,
mm-hmm.
But had similar to those vibes.
But yeah, there's not.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was just gonna say it's definitely like it's territory worth continuing to explore, because our concept of teenagers keeps evolving, and so there I think it's always interesting to take a sort of like hard edge approach of like, look at how real stuff gets at that age. We kind of assume it doesn't, except no, it totally does.
Yeah,
and adults forget.
Yeah, I also like that. I don't know, I obviously couldn't relate to it, but the whole setting it's in of like this extremely wealthy area where everyone's parent is like a politician or, you know, a mm-hmm. doctor or something. I don't know. And like, they all know each other and everyone just has like insane amounts of money. I did like that setting for it, because it gave almost everyone in the movie an edge of like, I don't know if this person is necessarily like that good of a person. You know how some of like the older, like Mean Girls, it was almost like mm-hmm. there were the good people and the bad people. And Katie accidentally became a bad person, but now she's a good person again. And this was very much like, I don't know if there's anyone in this movie that's like not a little bit, which I like, because that's more realistic to like being in a high school surrounded by people where everyone can do bad things.
I guess Russ is sort of.
Yeah.
I don't know. And like Carissa was growing drugs, but.
I say that was like the most obvious when they show her going in the big secret greenhouse.
I can't believe she really had drugs in there. I thought like, there's no way. There's no way she's growing. Oh, she's growing drugs. But who cares?
Yeah.
I don't know. Also,
they're in California. Like, I know it's on school property, but like, is it that big of a deal?
Yeah, maybe there's different legislation between marijuana and shrooms. Cause,
I think shrooms.
I guess that's the thing. I forgot she had those.
Again, like, it's Drea's plot to dose the entire class with shrooms. This is definitely a slightly outside of reality, consequentially, we're dealing with here. Because that is not something you would just do and be like, oh, well, I apologize. And the boy's like, well, as long as you told the truth, we can date again. That's fine.
Well, and the obvious, like, method of revenge there is you tip off, like, the principal or headmaster or whatever, headmaster Sarah Michelle Gellar, about the drugs in the greenhouse. I did not think the obvious route for revenge there is let's steal her shrooms, dose the entire class in public, and then they'll go look in her greenhouse because they'll know she's the one that made the food. Like, what?
Yeah.
Well, but you needed the boy dose so you could steal his phone.
Yes.
It's true.
That was the excuse. I want to talk about Sarah Michelle Gellar in the movie. I also want to talk about the conspicuous lack of adults otherwise. Mm. But before we do that,
let's check the group message. I want to talk to you all about my pits. My armpits.
All right.
Okay.
And what I put on them. Because I really like Native, and I use their products on all over my body, but I especially love their deodorant. And that's what you know them for, is their aluminum-free deodorant that has a very bare, naked ingredients list. Ooh. But ingredients you're going to read and know what you're looking at, like coconut oil, shea butter, and baking soda. So not a long list of a bunch of things you can't pronounce. And it is designed to provide 72-hour odor protection with naturally derived ingredients and a smooth, residue-free application, which is very important to me as someone who habitually forgets to put on deodorant until after I've put all my clothes on and I have to do like the reach under to put it on. I don't have to worry about getting it all over my clothes. And then there's a scent option for everyone, of course. If you want to smell spicy and woodsy or clean and fresh, they have some available limited edition scents, like their cabin collection of warm cider and cinnamon, cashmere and rain, toasted marshmallow and vanilla, and wildwood and cardamom, which I have tried the toasted marshmallow and vanilla in the past, and it smells exactly like it sounds. They all smell delicious and make you smell delicious. So I highly recommend Native deodorant and products, and try out those fun cabin scents now that we're in the cozy season. So Tay, if our listeners also want to check them out, what should they do?
Smell and feel fresh all day long with Native. Get 20% off your first order by going to nativedeo.com/buffering or use promo code buffering at checkout. That's nativedeo.com/buffering or use promo code buffering at checkout for 20% off your first order.
So I like cereal. My kids like cereal. My husband loves cereal. You know, I always think of like cereal as when I think about cereal, I think about remember when Calvin and Hobbes used to like watch cartoons on Saturday morning and eat like they made up a cereal that they ate like chocolate frosted cocoa bombs or sugar bombs or something like that. Mm-hmm. That's what I think of with cereal. I think of like Saturday morning cartoons and treating yourself to something yummy. And then as you know, as a grown up or like as a parent, I'm supposed to like eat something that has more protein and stuff in it and isn't just sugar. And Magic Spoon is here to rescue me so I can still have those warm, cozy childhood memories of eating something tasty in a bowl in front of the cartoon. But at the same time, feel a little bit better about what I'm eating. They've replicated your favorite childhood cereals to taste good and have some protein and stuff in there for you. Each serving contains 0 grams of sugar and over 13 grams of protein. So Magic Spoon knows you want your cereal to taste good. You want it to be a treat for you. But at the same time, you know, we don't want all that sugar and we need a little protein in there. It's also gluten-free. It's grain-free. It's soy-free, so if you have specific restrictions, Magic Spoon has you covered. And they've got all kinds of flavors. They've got cocoa. They've got blueberry muffin. They've got cinnamon roll. They have a bunch of wonderful flavors. You can mix them together, create your own box. We love Magic Spoon here, and I think you would love Magic Spoon, too. So, Taylor, if our listeners want to check out Magic Spoon, what should they do?
Well, they should head to magicspoon.com/buffering to grab a custom bundle of cereal and try the magic for yourself. And be sure to use our promo code BUFFERING at checkout to save $5 off your order. And Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. That's magicspoon.com/buffering and use the code BUFFERING to save $5.
I just want to say I really appreciated the whole series where our two main characters were talking about how hot Sarah Michelle Gellar, the headmaster, is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's when she popped up in the movie. I was like, "Oh wait, I'm 1,000% more on board."
She yeah. brings a really strong energy to every scene. She's very powerful. And I don't know, like, I'm assuming that they were recognizing that there would be viewers like myself who I am of an age that when she appears, I'm like, "Oh, good, Buffy's here." Buffy will save us. Buffy will make it right. So I already associate her with a lot of strength and power, and then she's the headmaster and she's the boss. I very much appreciate that, like, you know, it's Sarah Michelle Gellar. It's Buffy. Buffy's here.
She just has such perfect energy for that role of just like constantly kind of intimidating, but also in like a kind way. But also can be like super powerful and bad intimidating if needed. Her little tree.
You also get the sense, unlike in a lot of these movies, you have like the adults who are clueless.
who have no idea that, like, who are like, it's just high school kids. Like, what? You have a crush? What's wrong? Mm-hmm. You know, like, there's those adults. And then there are the adults who are, like, malicious. The bad, like, sometimes in the movies, they have, like, the bad teacher who mm-hmm. assumes all the kids are terrible. Like, you're all a bunch of, you know, hooligans or whatever, and, like, hates children. And, like, usually that's where adults are. They're one of the two things. And it's rare that you get an adult who's like, I know what you all are up to. Like, I know how bad this stuff gets. But I'm very realistic about it, and can also talk, like, when she talks about, like, trauma and resilience, like, I get it. But my job is to try to keep you in line and get you into college as much as possible. I don't know. It was mm-hmm. it was a refreshing sort of take on an adult.
Well, it really did feel kind of like a grown-up Buffy.
Yeah.
Yeah,
like, it did.
I don't know. I mean, it's just, whatever she's talking about, whatever she's gone through to learn all those lessons, it's like, maybe it was killing a bunch of vampires. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, and as you kind of alluded to earlier, she kind of is the only adult that is, like, consistently in the film, which mm-hmm. I think, again, where they are does a good job of maybe explaining that, even though it seems a little like there's not an adult anywhere ever. There should be one parent somewhere. But I guess because they're all, like, super high-powered individuals or whatever, we're supposed to believe they're always traveling and working and, you know, not really present for their kids. And the only family or only kid who doesn't have parents like that is Drea. And she says her mom is working all of the time because she's a, you know, single parent. She works a lot of hours.
I wondered if that was trying to, because I thought it was kind of conspicuous, the fact that, like, there never are grown-ups in this movie. Mm-hmm. They're never involved. And they just have a lot of parties and, like they have sex and do drugs and, like, no, but there's never a grown, there's never the threat of an adult presence. And, like, I know how old that makes me sound, but it's just like, I would see these
kids these days.
Well, I would see these teenagers in bed together and think, like, aren't they worried? Like, is no one concerned that an adult is going to walk in at any moment? Like, nobody is ever worried about an adult walking in. And it was just like, I don't know. That is so weird. Because even in old teen movies, you would see that sort of, like, there was the threat of, uh-oh, mom and dad are home.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know if it's a case of a sort of, like, heightened reality or sort of cartoonish reality that they've just chosen to set the movie in. Or is life just like that when you're really, really rich? It could be either one.
It may be. I mean, it did give me the sense. And I don't know if this was because, like, there is so much of the plot that is, like, related to social media and, like, your appearance and, like, the video was shared that way. You know, like, a lot of the way that they destroy people, other than, like, the drugs, has to do with social media.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know if that's to echo, like, how isolating that can be, you know, that, like, kids exist on social media in complete isolation from their parents.
Yeah.
They don't have an adult or a guardian to help them in those situations. Like, they're out there on their own doing whatever the heck they're doing.
That's fair. I do think it says something, though, about what we see as, like, the toxic male now. It's not like you would have seen in, you know, some of the older teen movies. Now he, like, runs the, what does he call it? The cis hetero male club for female identifying students.
God, that was so good.
Or something like that. Like, he's up there as, like, this symbol for supporting women and respecting women and encouraging all the boys mm-hmm. at the school to do the same. And, you know, secretly, obviously, he's, like, an awful person who doesn't respect women and treats them all horribly.
It definitely, like, there's that sort of cynicism to it, which I think is, like, I usually shy away from cynicism, but I think it's kind of fair. In the sense that, like, in old movies like this, definitely, like, the bad guy, like, you think about the 80s bad boy.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the, you know, the popped collar on his polo shirt. And he's even back then, like, he had a sweater tied around his shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
He was very rich and very, like, much a jerk. But he was just, like, your classic toxic guy. Like, just alpha guy. I mean,
outwardly
gross,
disrespectful to women.
Yes. Like cause cool. them chicks and babes and stuff. And mm-hmm. I don't know, like, that was very much it. And like the idea that like this is what that looks like now, but it's the same thing.
Yeah.
Like it's just it's the like the costuming is different and he uses different words so that but like his goal is the same.
Mm-hmm.
It's cynical, but I mean, probably accurate, I would guess.
Yeah. I also absolutely loved that they're because he's dating Drea's old best friend. And
Tara.
Yes. And when it comes out that he's been like hooking up with like dozens of girls in the school and all these text messages get sent out, they come up with this plan for them and all their friends to tell people that they're what are they ethically non-monogamous? Yeah. Is that what they say? Which is just
poly.
Wild. Like the fact that this is now the era of teen movies where it's just like that's, you know, that's how you cover up the awful things he's done. Is you just tell people that they're poly and, you know, that's okay. It just that I was dying at that part, laughing at them going around and telling all the various like cliques of people, don't worry, it's not cheating, they're just poly. Which I would like to clarify, he was cheating. They were not polyamorous.
That's this not
was
what not, polyamory
yeah,
is.
They were not actually poly. They just, he was cheating and she didn't want it to look like he was because she didn't want to ruin their social status.
It was in fact unethical non-monogamy.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's another thing that they sort of kind of, by the end, there's so much redemption. When she shared those texts, when they both did together, all of the women, like there were, they showed enough of the text messages in the movie that you knew there were sort of at least partially nude pictures of women among those pictures. And maybe completely. I mean, we don't know. We don't, there may have been other sex videos. We don't really know what the content was, but we know women were in them. And all of those women were also like exposed that way to all of the student body.
Yeah.
And you can only imagine when he was going around telling people like, oh, no, I'm just poly, and everybody was fine. Like, everybody was okay with this. There were probably a good number of them who were like, oh, I mean, I wasn't. Like, I wasn't okay. I didn't, you know, that was not something I signed up for. But where you don't hear that voice.
Well, and I mean, the premise of the whole movie starts with what happens to Drea. And then, I mean, it is downplayed. But presumably, Drea then did it. They both did, Eleanor and Drea, to a bunch of other girls, pretty much the same thing. Which is kind of the blue-haired dude.
Russ.
Yeah, he points it out to Drea, you didn't think about that. And it's so, it's mentioned, and she's kind of like, oh, right, like, sad about it for a second. And then it's like, that's all, we're not going to come back to that.
Yeah.
Which, again, well, I think the whole movie is, it is like Heather's in that it's kind of, we're not really existing in reality here, everything's a little heightened, everything's a little removed.
Yeah.
And I think they could have, you know, that big party at the end of the year that they all go to.
The admissions party.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It is because they all got into Ivy League schools.
Mm-hmm.
All of the people attending this party, we are supposed to believe, got into Ivy League schools. And we have seen most of them do absolutely terrible things. And a couple of them admit to being sociopaths, whether or not they actually diagnostically are, like they feel that they are. They identify with sociopathy, whatever that means to them. We've seen this. And then they're all going to Ivy League schools. And with the exception of like Drea making the choice not to. There's kind of like, I feel like there was a moment for like, and now all these people get to make all the rules for the world. Like they're going to get these amazing degrees, amazing opportunities, make amazing connections and go on to rule the next generation. And that's just kind of like there.
That's how it works.
Yeah,
I know. But we could make like that could be recognized. We could like that. You can say that, like say it really clearly.
Well, I mean, I do think in an era in an era post, you know, Operation Varsity Blues, you know, post Aunt Becky going to prison, I think like that's that storyline enough of all of these people who the only thing we know about all of them for sure is they all have a lot of money and a lot of connections. Like the fact that all of them get into an Ivy League school, that's just like, well, yeah, I mean, it probably has nothing to do with their grades or abilities and everything to do with who their parents know. Which isn't unrealistic. Again, it's heightened. Like, I don't think there's actually a school where probably everyone is going to an Ivy League. Well, I don't know. Maybe there is. I don't know. But
I'm sure there are.
Yeah. I don't live in that part of society.
We don't. They don't exist in West Virginia. I'll tell you that.
maybe in California, actually. But, you know, I mean, that's the whole thing, is the only thing we know for sure about everyone in this school, even the people we don't meet, is all of their parents have a lot of money. And power, presumably.
I feel like that is the one caveat to the fact that maybe Drea has done the most offenses, but she's also the scholarship kid who comes from like hardworking people. So there's a part of me that's like, I don't really care. Do whatever you need to do.
Yeah,
I think they're banking on that. I feel like the movie depends on you feeling that way a bit about her, and then also recognizing how like the thing that Max did to her is really horrible.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the thing that she did to Eleanor was really horrible.
Yeah.
And I think you need that and the fact that Drea has had to struggle so hard to get where she was. I think you need that to try to follow the characters through their redemption. That like they're banking on you feeling that way.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, I did. Like, I liked them. Mm-hmm. I mean, it helps that they're both very talented actors who are enjoyable to watch on screen.
I did see a lot of tweets though in the vein of it was like awful for them to put the two of them in these places together and have all these moments together and then not have them kiss at any point.
There was so much
tension between them the whole time.
I felt that. I don't think that was intentional.
I don't think we're supposed to think for any reason that Drea is queer. Obviously Eleanor is. But I just think that's because they're two, you know, great actresses that have these moments together, and a lot of people just wanted to see them kiss.
Yeah, I think that's why they had the Max's little sister, the girl that Eleanor ends up with. You see, to throw another girl. We need to have something gay happen here.
There has to be something gay.
And they waited until during the credits to give us, you know, an actual like scene with them.
Well, they kissed on her birthday.
I guess that's true.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. The last thing I need to talk about is the fashion in this movie.
Yeah.
Because the costumes, the uniforms they wear at this school are just perfect. Just
weird pastel capes and berets. Like,
yeah.
It's
like
intense.
It's all lavender and light green and... blue, I guess. I don't know. But yeah, they all have little capes and berets and like the shirts and plaid skirts. And it is just magical to look at.
I felt like there were moments. I felt like at times that their uniforms and some of the fashion was a bit of a wink to Clueless.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it was just a little bit of a, we see you, Clueless. Yeah. We remember you. We know that you were part of what brought us to this moment.
Yeah.
We know that you were there. I felt like you said, the scene, there was the one scene that was very reminiscent of the Burn Book scene.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like we could probably, like if I watched it again, I feel like you could find just little nods to the history of like, especially teen girl movies that sort of led to this movie. I feel like there was probably all of that there.
That final outfit that... Eleanor wears that orange iridescent orange suit thing.
Yes,
I just felt like Romy and Michelle's high school reunion to me.
It did, and it. I also felt like Russ on his motorcycle and Drea coming out of the school all flustered, and him standing there looking cool with like his leather jacket and his motorcycle. It gave me very strong Heather vibes.
Mm-hmm.
Heather's vibes. Like, there's Christian Slater. Oh, okay. There he is.
Yeah.
I all of Eleanor's outfits, really, once she has, like, the quote-unquote makeover, which I like that they say, like, oh, that's so problematic, but, oh, it's so fun. Like, that was very Clueless also. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, you're the new unpopular kid. Let me make you over and make you popular. Mm-hmm. All of her outfits, even when she hits Drea with her car... And then is like, I went home and had a costume change after I hit you with my car to come visit you in the hospital.
I do like all the zippers on that one, though.
Yeah. All of her looks were very good. That really bright, like, full body, I think it was a dress, like, very colorful that she wears to go visit Drea in the hospital after she's hit her with her car. All of those fits.
The stripy one. Yeah.
So good.
That shit's good. Yeah. I want to say, just this is just for me, the setup of the, mm-hmm. this last party they're all going to have, and they hide their phones, and it's the most debaucherous, ridiculous. The delivery on that, where, oh, we got a big pool of champagne, and then these two guys are punching each other. And then some witches are at a table.
I don't know what they wanted us to do with that. That moment, to me, was like, is this debauchery? Because this was every slumber party I had.
Yeah. The Instagram witches, like the astrology, whatever, like that's mm-hmm. how the Max's sister yeah. introduces them. That has to be like a little bit of like, this is the craft if the craft were in 2022, right?
Yeah, that was the craft
and,
nod.
And very
yeah.
rich.
Yeah, yeah.
And also they didn't do any magic.
No.
No.
Unless you consider that, you know, maybe there's another movie happening here. After the texts are revealed and like Max starts this polyamory pitch, mm-hmm. the one lead witch, I forget her name. Mm. They say her name.
They just call her. They say her name up front and then call her the Instagram witch like 10 different times.
She looks at her, I assume her coven, and says, tonight we have some magic to do, girls. And then by the end of the movie, we do see Max pay. So maybe there's another movie happening here.
None of it was Drea and Eleanor, actually.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
That's the Halloween movie we need.
Yes. I would love to see that movie. If like there was, if you could see this story from every different click's point of view.
Yeah.
I'd watch those movies.
The way they portrayed the... I assume the show choir / theater clique, because they're playing Zip Zap Zop at one point on the lawn.
Oh, yeah. Don't they call them the edgy theater kids?
Yes, you're right. That also felt very like, mm-hmm, yeah. You see us. That's accurate. Well, thank you all for watching this. I really, really enjoyed it, just because you all introduced me to so many of the classic teen girl movies. This felt like... in homage to all of them, while also mm-hmm. being very my generation.
Yeah. No, I enjoyed it. I really did enjoy it. I had intended to watch it anyway, and I liked it. And, yeah. It's on Netflix.
Yes.
There.
What's next? Sydney.
Oh, I'm next. yeah. So we saw Sarah Michelle Gellar in this, and I love her, and it is... spooky season. We have done Buffy before, so we can't talk about Buffy. I mean, we could, but that doesn't seem right. I could always talk about Buffy. But instead, we're going to talk about I Know What You Did Last Summer, another Sarah Michelle Gellar classic.
All right.
Scary teen slasher flick.
I haven't seen it before, so I'm excited.
Well, thank you both. Thank you, listeners. You can go to MaximumFun.org if there are other... we know there are other podcasts you'd enjoy. You don't have to wonder. There are great shows. Go check it out. And you can tweet at us at StillBuff, and you can email us at StillBuffering@MaximumFun.org. And thank you to the Novellas for our theme song, Baby, Change Your Mind.
This has been your cross-generational guide to the culture that made us. I'm Riley Smurl.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
And I'm Taylor Smurl.
I am Still Buffering.
And I am too.
Also, the soundtrack for this movie.
That they close on that Meredith Brooks song. You know, that was the curse of our generation. Every, like, basic girl's number one karaoke song, and now it will be born again.
I love that, and I love the orchestral version of How Bizarre.
Her Majesty served Great Britain and the Commonwealth loyally for over 70 years. And while, of course, we feel a profound sadness, we must remember she lived a long life and died in such a way that I think many of us would want for ourselves. She was at home, surrounded by her family. And, of course, she was listening to the Beef and Dairy Network podcast. The Beef and Dairy Network podcast is a multi-award-winning comedy podcast, and you can find it at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist-owned.
Audience-supported.